Hello and welcome to another episode of the Indian Dream Trends. This is where we explore ideas and markets that are set to explode in the next 3 to 5 years and discuss the opportunities to build profitable businesses. This week, we're covering the topic of high tech or niche farming. Check out the newsletter if you haven't, link in the show notes. 3 weeks back, the Indian Union budget was released, and within that was a special nugget of information that got us extremely curious. The government had approved a proposal to spend 640 crore rupees in setting up a large multi-purpose seaweed park in Tamil Nadu. Now, our initial thought was, who's going to eat so much seaweed? Are we exporting it all to Japan and China? Because these are the countries that consume seaweeds in their food. We were horribly wrong. Turns out, seaweed has tons of use cases and is used in the food, cosmetics and biostimulants industry. More on that in the episode. The global seaweed production is about $13 billion and is expected to double in the next 5 years. Currently, China and Indonesia dominate the market with 80% market share. India is less than 1% of the global market, a stat that shows the room for growth. We aren't behind because we don't have the necessary resources or the coastline to produce this seaweed. We are behind because the necessary focus and resources haven't been allocated to this industry. All of that seems to be changing now. In order to go deeper into this industry, we have Mr. Abhiram Seth, Managing Director at Agua Agri, India's largest producer of seaweed. He's had an extremely interesting journey, which started with him managing the export business at PepsiCo back in 1993. We got to learn that Pepsi had entered the country pre-liberalization and they were required to export a certain amount of goods out of India basis the turnover that they were doing within India. That resulted in them exploring the agriculture and contract farming route to export food products out of India. One such chance encounter with an international customer pointed them to the seaweed farming industry. Over the years, Mr. Abhiram Seth, while heading the Agri-Export Initiative at Pepsi, developed this market along with the government support. In 2008, when Mr. Abhiram was leaving, he asked the team at Pepsi if they were going to continue the seaweed business. Given the export conditions of pre-liberalization had since been removed, Pepsi was now planning to shut down this initiative because this was not part of their core focus area. That's when Mr. Seth requested Pepsi to buy this business, and Pepsi happily obliged by selling the business at book value to Mr. Seth. In the episode today, we talk about Mr. Seth's journey building Agua Agri, the seaweed industry in general and the use cases of seaweeds, and where does he think the opportunities lie. Extremely interesting topic. It's niche. We believe there are tons of profitable business opportunities waiting to be built in this industry over the next decade or so. So if you're into this kind of stuff, do listen to the episode. Before we jump on to the episode, just one quick request. Follow us on Apple, follow us on Spotify, give us a rating on Apple. The algorithm gods will then help us reach more people, and more people can then hear about how profitable businesses in India can be built. Thank you so much. With that, let's jump on to the episode. So, Mr. Seth, thank you for taking time out and agreeing for a deep dive in the seaweed market. To start with, tell us, what was the business model like when you acquired the business and how has it evolved since? And also with that, if you could help us understand the use cases of seaweed.
Initially, when I took over, and even in the last part of PepsiCo's journey, we were basically procuring the seaweed, drying it, cleaning it, baling it, and exporting it to the processors who were working for the company which had introduced us to this. So there was a flow of primary raw material moving to them. When I took over in 2008, we enlarged our engagement with CSMCRI and set up a basic processing plant for converting it into carrageenan, this seaweed which we're making, kapa, into carrageenan. And CSMCRI, looking at the needs of the business, by then had worked on a technology where you could produce both carrageenan, which is a hydrocolloid, and a hydrocolloid is basically a thickening agent or a gelling agent, which is, has multiple applications from food. It's a part of ice cream mix. It's part of sausages. It's used in clarification for the beer industry. So it's a wide range of applications. Cosmetics also use seaweed extracts and seaweed gels as a part of their formulations.
As I understand it, it's basically used as a thickening agent.
Thickening, binding, gelling. It makes a... See, the property of this product is that it is soluble in hot water. And if you solubilize it in hot water and allow the water to come to room temperature with just 1-1.5% incorporation in water, you will get a stable jelly at room temperature. Let's understand, seaweed is a very wide, you know, it's like saying you're growing vegetables. Now, each vegetable is different, you know, and each vegetable has a different application. We are doing warm water algae, which are largely used for hydrocolloid production globally. In India, our science system and we work together and we make two products out of it, hydrocolloids as well as biostimulants for agriculture. Now, biostimulants are products which improve the nutrient uptake efficiency and improve productivity of the crops. So we started making these two products out of it. And in one of the conferences, when I was talking about this initiative, Tata Chemicals product development team members were there, and after that they reached out, and that's how the relationship with Tata started. Till then, I must share with you, marketing biostimulants for agriculture was turning out to be a big challenge. Even though we had demonstrated by multi-location trials and large projects where we showed that the productivity would go up by 15-30%, yet to market them to the farmer, ultimately you have to go through the traders. And these agri-traders are a difficult breed to deal with if you are not dealing from a position of strength. So when Tata's came, it was like a blessing in disguise. And we started making Paras Vita, both for foliar and soil application for them. And post that journey, opened up the gates for our expansion, and we raised both equity and debt and went in for large expansion, and for which we got great support by way of debt from the science system institutions like Technology Development Board and TIFAC, because it was a homegrown technology which was being applied on a commercial domain. But then came the biggest setback. Tata suddenly in 2016 decided that they are going to exit the fertilizer business. And this happened without any notice or any transition system for us, you know. So suddenly 85% of our revenue customer was no longer a customer. So we went through a fairly difficult phase for about a year because we had fairly high fixed costs and we had the debt liability. But we were already talking to IFFCO, and then began that second part of the journey. IFFCO got into a marketing arrangement and we created Sagarika, which in 2016 was unveiled at the Technology Day at Vigyan Bhavan. After that, there was no looking back. Within 6 months' time, looking at the market acceptance of the product, IFFCO came back and said, look, if we are going to build this business together, we should have a stake in your business. So they acquired the equity of all other my friends who had joined this journey with me and gave them an exit. And they became 50% equity partners. And since then, the business is growing at over 100% per year.
This is just the biostimulant product, right? So what the partnership with IFFCO on Sagarika is for...
the biostimulant.
Okay.
Now, the second, hydrocolloids have remained relatively static. But as we speak now, we are embarking upon 2 or 3 major initiatives. Working with the science system, we have acquired the technology jointly developed under a Nimitli project for animal nutrition. And we would soon be launching products for poultry and cattle. And I have also initiated trials for fish feed additives. We also have tied up with international knowledge partners to expand the range of hydrocolloids. Because, you know, hydrocolloids business, people look for solutions. When you say it's a thickener, it's a simplistic description. But what are you thickening? Are you thickening a milkshake? Or are you making an ice cream? Or are you binding a sausage? Or are you making a fruit jelly? Each application is not a simple product. It's a combination of multiple hydrocolloids which go into making these products. And large markets for this exist internationally. So we have decided, we have tied up with international consultants to build this portfolio, because with this announcement, which you heard in the budget, was just a smattering of it. But realistically, the government has taken up the seaweed cultivation promotion on a serious mission mode. And I think as the biomass availability improves, we have to look for expanding markets both nationally and internationally. Otherwise, there should be, right now there's a supply side constraint. It should not convert into a demand side constraint going forward. So the new range of products will be both a wider hydrocolloid range, a range of products for animal nutrition. And then there are multiple other domains in which we are working on a food additive with one company who are going to be working on a food product. We are working on with some collaborations on packaging and fruit coating and multiple other initiatives.
So when you say you're working on these initiatives or doing the product development, I'm trying to understand if the development is on the growing side, which is how do you grow a certain type of seaweed? Right now you're doing carrageenan and a biomass product, and how do you do other types of product? Or is the product development more on how you process this?
See, both are equally important.
Okay.
In order to grow other cultivars, there the role is more with this government initiative, because other cultivars have to be brought into the country, you know.
Right, from the dominant countries, wherever these are growing, you bring in, and as you said,
see whether they are viable.
Right.
And do the environment impact assessment of them, and then introduce them.
And then even after introducing, you'll have to do what you did with PepsiCo, which is take that limited amount and then multiply it over a couple of years to really do a viable project out of it.
Absolutely. The same kind of thing. But today, with the science moving forward, we're looking at tissue culture and other methods which could lead to a more rapid multiplication and can also be the base source. Because one part in this journey is that due to the sudden rise in seawater temperature around 2016-17, the seaweed planting material, large losses took place. So since then, it has been almost a recreating the biomass for expanding the cultivation. So from a peak of 1,200 farmers, at one stage we had come down to 100. We are now back to about 300-400. But they need to go up to thousands, you know. The government's dream is that at least should provide a livelihood to at least 100,000 people to start with. So for that, large-scale planting material availability by putting up seed nurseries, tissue culture labs, has to be done on a large scale.
Which is where the initiative by the government to set up that seaweed park and bring more attention and investment towards this industry.
Seaweed park is a, you know, I don't know what why it was called multi-purpose seaweed park, but because there are multiple cultivars, there are multiple application areas. So a park which provides facilities, a centralized location where like-minded people could work and operate must be the dream. And since Tamil Nadu is the only area where success has been demonstrated, so they are going to start possibly from there.
Why only Tamil Nadu? Is it because of the efforts that you put in, and Tamil Nadu was the first choice back then? And because of that, the industry has developed, or there are certain conditions from a seawater perspective that's only met in Tamil Nadu? Because the way I'm thinking about this is we have such a vast coastline on both sides, right? And if this is viable, and given the fact that we are a tiny percentage of the overall global production, why aren't we using the entire coastline to do more of this?
See, firstly, one part which we have to understand that theoretically you can do it in high seas also. Like you have oil rigs in high seas, you can have cultivation also in high seas. But that is not a livelihood model. That a large industry can make that kind of investment to put that kind of anchoring system which will withstand high tidal amplitudes, storms, and all kinds of things In fact, cultivation nowhere on that scale has been done. Cultivation is normally done by local communities in Indonesia and Philippines. It's only in cold water areas where the large-scale seaweed industrial farms exist. The warm water species are done more by as a family farming operation kind of a model. So the challenge has been, as I told you, when the initially people turned around and said, this particular variety is not environmentally friendly, it was taken to heart by our environment department. And they said, you can't cultivate it in Gulf areas. Basically, cultivation in most South Asian countries happens in Gulf areas and coral areas and areas where there is no high tidal amplitude, no large wave action. Area is protected. You put small anchors, you know, which you anchor small boats with to hold the rafts in place. If you do it in high tidal amplitude area, the anchoring system investment, the protection of the cropping area becomes a major challenge. So that is why it has got restricted to Tamil Nadu. In Gujarat, multiple pilots have been tried. But I think till the time the Gulf areas are not opened up, that's in Gulf of Kutch, in Ka area and other places, chances of success would be are more difficult, you know. I'm not saying that's impossible. But, you know, the challenge which happens is, as a project, what happens is when you do it for 6 months, results look very good. Suddenly, one major tidal action happens and you lose everything. It's just washed away. So either the protective systems have to be built in, much like they do to create a yard for the boat. So create a yard where seaweed cultivation takes place. Otherwise, it is not just that you can grow. See, if you look at Bombay coast, you know, when the sea is rough, you can't anchor a small boat, sailboat, and leave it there. It'll be washed away, you know. These rafts are bamboo rafts. They would be washed away very quickly.
That makes sense. So fairly high risk if not done in proper conditions and with proper protection.
Sure.
Interesting. Okay, now let's focus on the entire value chain of the seaweed industry. So what we've discussed more or less so far is the actual growing part of it by people who live on the coastlines, and this could be a way of livelihood. So they're doing the growing part of it. What happens once you grow it? What happens once you buy it from them? What are the next steps? What are the different businesses that have come up in the entire value chain?
I described to you the businesses we are in. We are right now in two major businesses. One is of hydrocolloids, and we have some basic applications for milk, for chicken processing, sausage processing, and we have some ice cream mix. And we do a large business. 85% of our business is in the area of biostimulants for agriculture, where we do both foliar and soil application products. And that is a very fast growing business because agriculture domain is huge, you know. And when I look at it today, even now our penetration would be maybe 2-2.5% as an industry, you know. So
I meant from the perspective of once you get the seaweed, there is processing that needs to be done. Are there multiple players who do the processing? How does the entire, like how from the seaweed once cultivated to the end product?
There are only about three or four major processing players in the country. Rest has, for one of the seaweed process products is agar, which is made from Gracilaria, another seaweed variety, for which there are multiple small units, but they again face the challenge because the biomass availability is very limited. So they run for only part of the year. And these units, the three units which are there, one is focused on agar, one is more focused on alginate, though they do a little bit of carrageenan. And we are focused on biostimulants and carrageenan. Bulk of the other players who are large in biostimulants import the concentrates from North America and Europe and make product formulations out of it and market them in India. Internationally, there is a large business in animal nutrition plus food application, you know, processed food as a texturizer. There's a large role for seaweed-based products. It's a multi-billion dollar market. Large companies are engaged in it, and it is often quite difficult. Let me tell you one thing. Biostimulant in a complex of food product has a very small component, critical component, but a very small cost component in it. So even if you are competitive, for a person to change from existing supplier who is giving a solution for that formulation often becomes a challenge. You know, if you're making an ice cream, in a ton of ice cream, you use about 1 kg of ice cream mix. In that 1 kg of ice cream mix, our product is 10%. So for an ice cream maker to adopt to a new ice cream mix takes time, takes a little bit of effort. So it's a slow journey. Animal nutrition, the other big field, I think is a wide open field. And I'm very excited about it because recently you must be reading news about people wanting antibiotics not to be included in diets of poultry and cattle. And the data which the science system has generated clearly demonstrates, apart from improvement in health and productivity, the immune modulation response in animals by use of seaweed-based formulations is dramatically improved. That opens a huge wide field. And if it works for animals in today's time, where immunity is a major topic of discussion, days are not far when nutraceutical products, which already exist to a certain extent internationally, not focused on immunity, but more products would come into that domain, you know.
Interesting. So from a future opportunity perspective, one of the things that I'm hearing is we are still scratching the surface on developing the use cases for these products. And when I say developing, it's not saying that we need to innovate and invent new use cases. These use cases already exist. We just need to make sure how do we make it viable in India, right?
You basically convert them into products, you know.
Yeah.
These are ideas which have to be converted into products and marketed.
Interesting.
And you know, internationally, there's a heightened interest on seaweed because of two other reasons. One major reason why it is engaging the attention is its role as a sequestering carbon from the seawater. And secondly, which is equally important, you know, you have a washdown of nutrients from agriculture onto the sea in the coastal areas. And seaweed helps sequester the nitrites and phosphates which find their way. Otherwise, they are leading to acidification, you know, which is detrimental to the sea ecology. So when you want to do, and there's a heightened interest on contamination and the damage which is being caused to the sea by the runoffs and the discharge of waste materials, you know. And since this activity does not require added nutrition, water and land, and water and land are scarce, so it could become the new food factory going forward, you know.
Yeah.
You do aqua agriculture. So, you know, from seaweed cultivation, the new terminology should be aqua agriculture, because you are just using not land, but using the sea to grow plants which can be grown there, you know.
So from an opportunity perspective, if new entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs or people from adjacent industries are looking to get into this industry, where do you think the opportunities lie? Because some of them, I think, as you said, have very high barriers to entry, right? Competing with the three large processors right now, unless you come with significant capital investment, is probably not going to be possible. And so in that sense, do you think there are opportunities?
No, let me tell you, the large processors are not very large. Huh? They're reasonable. They are not very large. But let me tell you, opportunity is vast, but it is not to be seen as a trading opportunity, you know, that you get in as trader to make quick returns kind of a thing. If you're committed to build a business, because the penetration, if I look at it, is so marginal in each of these categories in India by Indian companies that no two, three companies will be able to exploit this whole opportunity. There are multiple players needed. Basically, you have to see on the front end which domain which you believe you have right to succeed there, you know, because ultimately you will then integrate in the back end to cater to that market. But you must have a comfort of the choice of market which you want to attack. And it's a wide open space, you know. So you identify the target domain and the target market and then work backwards. Even these companies are happy to collaborate, you know, would be happy to collaborate if somebody is wanting the basic material sourcing to do further value addition and developing it into a marketable format to cater to a market.
Got it. What are you personally most excited about when it comes to the future of this industry?
Look, I'm most excited about today because for the first time, there is a nodal ministry which has been identified. The Prime Minister of the country is fully backing and has been backing it for years that this is a sunrise area and India has a chance to succeed here and we should do it. Now that it is reaching a point where the hurdles, regulatory hurdles, both for growing as well as the limitations imposed for marketing the products due to regulation will be removed. And this opens up a completely new chapter where high growth can be expected and can be targeted, you know. So the most exciting part is, you know, for the first time, I think people have started understanding, at least in the government, what this has to offer. Earlier, in every meeting, you would first have to explain what is seaweed, you know, what can you do with it? So at least at the institutional level, there is a complete understanding of the requirements. And I think this should lead to the required change. You know?
Got it. One last question before we close it out. From a technology perspective, when it comes to processing this seaweed, how does a new entrepreneur acquire these technologies? Are there international countries? And I know China is a dominant player in this industry. Is China the place to look at to acquire these technologies, or where do you look at?
Look, a large part of this work happened in Europe, Scandinavia, some part of North America. And so, you know, my point is there is no single answer for it.
Got it.
As I said,
the multiple countries are doing multiple different focus areas, I'm assuming.
You know, if you decide you want to go for animal nutrition is one point. If you decide to do hydrocolloids, that's a separate dimension. Right. If you want to do biostimulants, that's a third dimension. So you have to choose. And the technologies and knowledge is available both from the science system in India, both CSIR system and the ICIR system have technologies and products to offer, and also international sources, both from Europe and even in Asia.
Makes sense.
I don't know how open China is to providing technologies, but if somebody has the linkages, they can also look at there.
How big do you think the industry is in India? Not from a revenue perspective or production perspective, but how many people are involved in this industry apart from the cultivators? And I know cultivators are the big majority, as you said, 300, 400 in Tamil Nadu itself. But from the value chain beyond that, how many players are involved?
Not very many. I would be able to count them on my fingertips, you know.
Interesting. Which is what I get most excited about, right? If you think of the upside potential, given that we are just a tiny blip in the overall global production of this, and the fact that the government is now focusing on this, and the fact that this is not a lot of players are already in it. So it's one of those niche industries that can present a extremely profitable business opportunity for entrepreneurs who are looking to get into something like this.
You look at it this way. Indonesia had only a few years head start over us. And they now produce more than 500,000 tons of dry mass per year.
And what are we at?
We are at 500 tons.
Wow.
Each ton sells for around 40, 50 rupees, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Or today our price is about 50 rupees we pay to the farmer.
And you would say this is not because There are certain climatic conditions that are better for Indonesia versus us, right? It's, we can replicate the same thing across the coastlines in India.
Let me put it this way. There are enough areas in India where we can build. See, the peak production we have done in a single year has been close to 2,500 tons. So going to 2 lakh tons, 3 lakh tons in Tamil Nadu alone is possible. Then there is Gujarat. Then I believe a lot of work has been done to identify possible sites. But those possible sites, now pilots have to be run, you know.
Right.
To validate. You know, I've been in this journey now for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's not a quick fix game, you know. Now it will become a lot easier with the institutional support coming.
100%.
But people have to come in with a mindset of building a business and staying in it, you know.
Yeah, I really like the idea where you shared that, hey, you, this is not like a trading opportunity, right? You can't just get in, buy from somewhere and sell it somewhere and hope that that's a business. It's one of those industries where you have to put in the effort to develop the industry, but it's not like it's going to be an unprofitable adventure, right? There are multiple profitable opportunities that can be exploited along the way.
You know, the great part is you would make money and you would do good for the society, for the country. And, you know, it would be truly a business which would help the society also, you know.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much for doing this, Mr. Seth. If you don't mind, people, you know, some listeners who might be interested in exploring this further, is it okay if we connect them to you directly?
Yeah, you can connect them to me. Yeah. And but request them to be patient that, you know, response time may be a little delayed, but I would respond to each one.
Thank you so much for doing this, Mr. Seth. We are extremely excited about this industry. We're glad that we got to read the entire budget and found this little nugget of information and eventually connecting with you. You know, you've been a pioneer for this industry in India, and we wish you all the best. Both you and Agua Agri, hope to see much more achievements in this industry by Agua Agri.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.